Blog Talk Radio.
Afternoon. This is Deborah Mitchell, your host. Once again, as always, we are here today. Welcome to another episode of Blog. Another episode of Coffee and Conversation. We do this usually every week and discuss what's going on in the world. And right now, we are focusing on what's going on in our black community. Lots of things happening with these protests, and a lot of the resistance against systemic racism and police brutality. These things are nothing new. We've been talking about this stuff 100 years since black folks was free from slavery. It's been the same issue that has been pervasive throughout the generations for centuries and throughout our society. And so I think that this is a time of change. We're not sure how much change is going to be, but, and you know, because you can expect that there will be some stonewalling and all of that kind of stuff, but, you know, we're looking for some things to happen in a positive direction. So today we're talking about the symbols and the images that sustain racism and white supremacy in society. Blackface, the mammy, the butler, all of these images are just a few of the things that are the latest target of this Black Lives Matter movement. And this is a movement, and we've been talking about it in this series, in this culture war series. If you have not seen the other videos, go back and watch them. They're hopefully informative for you, provide some perspective for you on some of the things that's going on. We've been dealing with police brutality. We've dealt with the protests, and we don't call them riots here. And there's a reason for that, because there is an anti-riot law. There are laws that prohibit insurrections. And so we have to be very careful, because as you've heard, the president and the vice president and some of the mass media channels like Fox News have been very quick to refer to civil disobedience as a riot, and that's not nothing new either. Anything that they want, anytime that the dominant society wants to sustain or keep going, anything that rises up against what they're trying to keep in place is considered a riot. And it's very strategic, because they do that to bring a lawless view to the public. And so now, of course, there are those that were there looting and burning and all of that kind of stuff, and we've talked about this stuff. However, these people were not necessarily a part of the legitimate protest, the actual movement itself. Some of them were agent provocateurs in terms of white supremacist groups that infiltrated these protests to loot and burn and make the discredit the movement. And make no mistake about it, these provocateurs are, in some cases, the agents of police departments. Yes, they are. So they are, and so so we are careful to in terms of how this whole process is being portrayed and not adding to or enhancing, you know, the negative aspects that are sometimes promoted in the media. So you guys are going to have to forgive me today. I am so disorganized today. I tell you, I have been miserable with this heat, and I know I'm not the only one. And I do have air conditioning, but I tell you, this air conditioning is not working properly, or it's just not enough. It's so hot, I think, that it, you know, I don't know if it's wearing my units out or what. I have two air conditioners in my house, and I've just been, it hasn't been good. So, so let me get to the topic, because I really want to dive into this thing. The phone lines are open. You can see the phone number at the top of the screen. You know, you can dial in at any time. I want to get through some of this dialogue, though, in terms of our discussion, and before you actually start calling in, so that we can, you know, discuss, so that we can share ideas and things like that. So we were talking about cancel culture. Now, if you don't know what the cancel culture is, I did a video a couple weeks ago called The Purge, and I talk about the cancel culture. Cancel culture is a pseudo-activism tool that is used by these millennials and Gen Z and all of that, the young folks, this younger generation. I don't know if it's Generation Z or Generation Y. I'm not sure. I know the millennials are kind of like in their 30s, I think. So at any rate, but this is a sort of an activism tool or methodology, so to speak, is employed by the younger generation. And what it is that it is basically a way for them to target certain things or certain people. And it could be anybody. It could be or anything. It could be anything from a worldview to an individual person, a celebrity, a politician. It could be a company, anything like that. And what they do is they socially drag the person or the company or the ideology, usually through social media, and shed a bad light on it to effectively cancel it or shut it down. And one of the examples that I gave in the Purge video was Ivanka Trump. Ivanka Trump was supposed to give a commencement speech at some university. I forget who it was. And what happened is that because of who she is and who she represents and who her father is and things like that, the students at this university says she does not align with our values, our worldviews and things like that. And so when they found out who was coming to address them for this commencement speech, she got canceled. Now, she ended up releasing her commencement speech video on Twitter, but the students said she can't come here. So that is an example of the cancel culture. And so what you're seeing happening in this Black Lives Matter movement is they are canceling anything that represents racism and white supremacy. And so that's why you have the targeting of different things. Now, this latest thing, as I said a minute ago, has to do with the symbols of racism, the symbols of white supremacy. And it's very important that we say that we distinguish between the two. Racism and white supremacy are two very important distinctions. Because racism, of course, is the biases, implicit biases and prejudices and stereotypes and things like that that are projected at or directed towards certain ethnic groups. White supremacy, on the other hand, has to do with systems and symbols and views, values, and things like that that maintain the superiority of white people, right? So these are two different things. They are two different things. They work in conjunction with each other, but they are two separate different things. So we need to understand the difference. And we need to understand the importance of symbolism. Symbolism, you know, because there's a big debate about whether or not we should even bother with taking the statue or taking the statues down and going after the companies that produce the Aunt Jemima products or Uncle Ben's products, and they're all going to change their branding. So let's talk about the importance of symbolism, because there's a couple things we have to do when we deal with this issue. One is that we have to deal with the historical context of these symbols, right? And we have to deal with how they operate to sustain and exert white supremacy and exert its influence over future generations and society. So, and then we have to follow the money too. We have to follow the money too, and we'll talk about that. So, okay, so when we talk about whether or not this is even a worthy effort of going after the Confederate flags, the Confederate statues and monuments and all of these types of things, we have to look at the historical context of what these symbols represent. And symbols are important because symbols are a way of, one, creating community, two, is to exert influence over the future. So when someone creates a monument, they are saying, when I'm gone and no longer around, my image becomes an influence or something of value in society. And it could go on forever, generation to generation to generation. So you're essentially still marching by the beat of that drum, even though that person's been gone 100 years, their influence is still held over certain views and certain values in society. So symbolism, we have to understand the power of symbolism and why this, again, as I said a couple as I've been saying all along throughout this series, is this is an absolute righteous cause. No, we cannot get. I was talking to someone this morning, and she said, "Well, we can't get all of them down." No, it's impossible. These flags and stuff, all those Southern flags, they're all offshoots of the Confederate flag. The American flag itself adopted the colors and the symbols of the Confederacy. So it's not the opposite way around. I think a lot of people think that the Confederate flag was designed after the American flag. No, it's in the reverse. So we have to understand this, and we have to look at the importance of these symbols. Now, you saw the other day with President Trump, he was at Mount Rushmore hosting fireworks, right? So, and then you saw, well, if you watch, you know, any type of world news, CNN or any of those stations, you saw Indian tribes out protesting and blocking traffic for people, the people that were trying to get into the Mount Rushmore site for this fireworks ceremony. And I tell you, Trump, I don't know, you know, it's so disrespectful. And the thing about it is that because the majority of people don't know the history behind things, that they kind of get away with this stuff. But the fact, let me tell you. So Mount Rushmore, let's talk about the history of Mount Rushmore. And I was listening to some things last night, and I found out some other stuff that I didn't even know. But that land, the reason why those Indians were protesting, see, that land is sacred ground. That land was given back to them because it was theirs in the first place, and it was stolen, and then it was given back to the Lakota tribe, I believe. I think it was the Lakota tribe. And what happened is that, well, they gave it back to them until they found gold up in them Black Hills, and then they took it, you know, then they took it back again. But the thing about it is that this is sacred ground for that, for those people. And so, so the fact that they were doing fireworks, it was like denigrating their sacred ground for them. But besides that, let's look at the history of Mount Rushmore itself, because Mount Rushmore was the vision of a guy. What is his name? Gutlow. What is his name? Hold on a second. His name is Gutlow. Okay. Borgum. Gutlow Borgum. He's a racist. It was his vision. And he actually conceptualized these things during the Great Depression. But what happened is that the Ku Klux Klan, at the same time, was up in Stone Mountain, Georgia, and wanted to do a monument dedicated to Confederate generals, Stonewall Jackson and some other folks. And so they wanted to do this monument. This Gutlow Borgum guy is a sculptor, and he had an idea about doing a sculpture dedicated to imperialism and the forefathers of but it was literally a tribute to imperialism and. When we look at the term imperialism, this gives us the idea of colonization and world domination, those types of things. So it was to be a celebratory piece of those men, George Washington and everybody else that's up on that, that's carved into the side of that mountain. He wanted to do a dedication piece to honor the men who essentially stole America, right? So, the Ku Klux Klan was up in Stone Mountain with an idea of doing a monument dedicated to Confederate soldiers. So some kind of way, this Gutlow guy hooks up with he's contacted by the United Daughters of the Confederacy. They were raising money. The Ku Klux Klan was also raising money. And people were also, in society, were giving their resources, because remember now, the country is going through a depression. And so this monument was supposed to give these people, give people hope and, you know, a reminder of the things that this country had accomplished and all that kind of stuff. So people were donating money and resources to have this monument built. Mind you, half of them couldn't even feed themselves. But they were so dedicated to this history that they were given of their own money and their own resources to help get the project done. So Gudlow and these United Daughters of the Confederacy hook up, and so the Daughters of the Confederacy brings them to the Ku Klux Klan, and he starts the Stone Mountain, Georgia project with the soldiers and the generals and stuff. So he gets fired around, I think it was around 1925. He gets fired, and they bring in another guy to work on the Stone Mountain project. And then it was ultimately finished by another guy. Let me give you their name. So Henry Augustus Luckman was the second guy who was a racist Jew, go figure. He wiped out all the Gudlow's work when they fired him and started all over on a smaller scale with these generals and all of that kind of stuff. But the work didn't get finished, or it was finished by Walter Kirkman Hancock. And it was finished, now this is the Stone Mountain Project. It was finished in 1970. It was dedicated on May the 9th, 1970, as the Confederate monument at Stone Mountain, Georgia. And shortly after, a Confederate commemorative stamp was issued by the United States Post Office as well. However, when Gudlow left the Stone Mountain Project, he went on over to the Mount Rushmore Project, because he had been contacted to do the president's on the side of Mount Rushmore in South Dakota. So he left Stone Mountain, went to South Dakota to work on Mount Rushmore, and so that's what you see today. So this whole thing with the monument, and there's similar stories like this in terms of these different statues and Confederate monuments that are all over the country. They're all over the country, but they are grounded in white superiority. That's what they're there for. They are there to signify the superiority of the white race. That is what they're all grounded in, this same ideology, because technically these Confederates were traitors, really, in reality. But it, you know, and then, you know, you have people talking about, well, you know, Trump was saying something the other day about these are beautiful works of art. And I mean, yeah, they're works of art, but it's a little bit more to it than that, you know. These statues have meaning, and they are there to exert influence over the thoughts and the values and of society. So it's not just works of art. I mean, you know, it's just more to it than that. So when you see things like this, and you see the Black Lives Matter movement say, and I tell you, I give them credit. There are some problems with the movement in terms of, you know, folks are saying, you know, this, the movement is being hijacked by women, white women, and the LGBTQ community. And, you know, we'll talk about some of that stuff. But in terms of the basic goal of this movement is absolutely righteous. It's absolutely righteous because these symbols, you can't get them all. It's so much paintings and you got all kinds of things, other works of art that contribute to this ideology. So it's impossible to eliminate all of these symbols from society because this has been going on for so long. It's so deeply ingrained that it's almost like you got to tear your own leg off to get, you know, something off of you. You're almost irrevocably intertwined now. You know, that stuff is so intertwined in our society that it's impossible to weed it all out. But the point is, and this is just my thought process, I think the importance of going after even some of these symbols is to let everybody know that these symbols are not okay. Because we just go on and on. We don't even think about what we're looking at. I didn't even realize until a couple weeks ago that there was a statue of Christopher Columbus in downtown Detroit. I had no idea. I've been here all my life, 50-some-odd years. So I had no, I don't know what I was thinking about. And so when they had protesters down there trying to take, you know, they were, I don't know if they was really trying to take it down or if they were just, you know, acting like they were going to attack this monument. I think they tried to vandalize it or something a little bit. But Mayor Dugan ended up taking the statue down and putting it in a museum and saying, okay, well, we'll have some type of community meeting to decide what we want to do with the statue. And it's like, you know, but and see, this is part of where this stuff gets problematic because Christopher Columbus didn't discover a doggone thing. It's a lie. They made it up. It's just not true. Listen, what do we need a statue of this dude who, you know, he just got credit for something, you know, just because, for whatever reason. There's no reason to honor him whatsoever. But this is what these statues and stuff do. See, over time, it's no longer a part of history. It becomes revisionist history. The whole narrative changes. Where something that is really comes out of something negative becomes good all of a sudden. They become the forefathers and the ancestors, and we use all these terms, but they were actually just crooks and robbers and thieves and you name it. Murderers. So this is where all of this stuff kind of gets problematic. And like I said, you know, I totally agree with what these young people are doing. I don't necessarily agree with how they're going about everything that they're doing. But listen, we as a different generation, myself, I'm a little older. And then you got the generation that came up, actually came through the civil rights movement. We need to really make an effort to understand these young people. We need to bridge this generational gap and understand what they're doing so that we can get behind them and support it. I said this in the previous video. We need to support this. I don't care if they stop marching tomorrow or next year. We need to be vigilant and making sure that we ultimately see the structural changes, because taking down statues is not a substitute for structural change. It's not. It's just symbolic of some of the of things that we need to pay attention to. Because, you know, in other words, and the way I see it, you know, it's like these kids are saying, you know, listen, they're running rings around us. They got their statues and, you know, and I'm glad that they did that. I am really glad that they did that. All of these brands, Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben's and all of that, Black Sambo, I think, what was the Lil Rascal? What was the guy? Buckwheat. Buckwheat was a creation from the Lil Black Sambo doll. So, you know, and see this is different. This part is different because that part is meant to attack our looks and keep us as a permanent underclass. Because what they use these symbols for, you see, with the Aunt Jemima symbol, you know, basically they're trying, you know, this is about all you can be. You can be the mammy, the maid, you know, that type of thing. And then those barriers were broke through, and then they revamped Aunt Jemima's look. But the idea was the same. Uncle Ben's with the butler. You had Uncle Ben's, and it was another brand that had the butler. I can't think of it right now. Then you had King Cotton. King Cotton, who remembers King Cotton bacon? They had the bacon. They had sausage, they had hot dogs or something, whatever the case may be. Okay, let's talk about King Cotton for a minute, and then I'm going to start taking phone calls. King Cotton was, okay, so King Cotton, this is where King Cotton came from, because what happened is that during the Civil War, the South wanted to break off from the North. And what happened is they decided, they said, listen, we can break off from them and we'll shut down their whole economy. Why? Because they depend on our cotton. Let me read you this quote. This is Senator James Henry Hammond of South Carolina. Check out what he says. He says, listen, without firing a gun, without drawing a sword, should they make war on us? We could bring the whole world to our feet. What would happen if no cotton was furnished for 3 years? England would topple. So they're even talking about England. England was dependent on the cotton from the South. England would topple headlong and carry the whole civilized world with her, save the South. No, you dare not to make war on cotton. No power on the earth dares to make war upon it because cotton is king. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Follow the money. Listen, all of this stuff is about money. All of it. All of it is about money. Let's see who's calling. Are y'all calling me? Okay, good. Let me take a call. Oh, here we go. Go ahead, caller. You're live on the air.
You know, on the monuments and statues, I'm against taking down people's statues. Those statues are of American soldiers that fought in many American wars. Just so
American soldiers or Confederate soldiers?
No, they was American soldiers. You had American soldiers that fought in the Mexican-American War, the Spanish-American War, the Puerto Rican War.
Are you talking about specific statues? Or are you talking because with the statues that I'm talking about is the Confederate statues.
Well, they fought in the American Civil War also. That's what people have done. Mm-hmm. They fought in the war. You had blacks that fought. You had Jews. You had Jewish Confederates, Asian Confederates, Mexican Confederates, Native American
mm-hmm,
Confederates,
mm-hmm.
the Iroquois. That's what they done. They fought in wars. Robert E. Lee fought in the Mexican-American War alongside of Grant and Zachary Taylor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They fought in the Civil War. The states that seceded from the Union by way of vote is the same states that voted to join the Union. Remember, Texas voted to secede from Mexico to join the Americas. Before that's what started the Mexican American War, which Robert Lee fought violently in.
Mm-hmm.
So those American soldiers, that what would West Point look like if it hadn't been for some of those which trained American soldiers today?
So do you think that it's more important to let's look at it this way then. In your opinion, you associate them more with the wars that they fought for the country more than
they're the history of this country
of white supremacy.
They're the history of the United States. You know, in Kansas City, Missouri.
Well, it's all our history. It's our joint history. It's our history too.
Well, it has to be respected. Look in Kansas City, Missouri. They voted, and they removed Martin Luther King's name off of what was Truth Boulevard. The whole city voted for that, and they said no. Pardon me.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it. You said where is it in Kentucky?
It was in Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, Kansas City.
In St. Louis, you had areas there around Fountain Park that's become regentrified, and these people said they've taken down King's statue out of Fountain Park. There in Harlem, that's become gentrified. They're removing. No, it's not retaliatory. It's what people want.
No, but listen, what I'm saying is that you know that they tried to. They arrested a young man out there in Georgia. They tried to take down the Andrew Young statue.
Well, they shouldn't be taking down people's statues. You had in Washington D.C. at Independence Park where Lincoln's statue is standing. Slaves paid for and designed that statue themselves, and you got some idiot wanted to take it down. In another area, mm-hmm. they took down the monument to the 54th Regiment, which was a black regiment that fought on the Union side in the Civil War.
Okay.
And
yeah,
you remember the movie Glory? You remember the movie Glory?
Absolutely.
Well, that's what the 54th, and they destroyed that monument. These people are ignorant.
I think that it's the resistance towards the symbols that represent white supremacy and racism, and I think that's what they are going for. It's impossible to tear down. You can't
tear
down all.
Let me ask you a question. What is white supremacy?
Mm-hmm. What is it? It's a social construct. It's a social construct to maintain the dominance of the white race in society.
All right. Now, let me say something to you.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at categorical things like agriculture, when you look at things like offshore oil drilling, equity financing, leveraged buyouts, boycotts, and sanctions. More than not, the face behind that is whites.
Mm-hmm.
Whites used to be the face behind shipbuilding. You know who's the supreme in shipbuilding now? It's China.
I have no idea.
You know who's the supreme in merchandise and in garments in New York now? It used to be the Jews. You know who it is now? It's the Asians. So this thing about white supremacy being about a mindset is totally ridiculous. So what about Asian supremacy?
Yeah, but
what about
Koreans are not the dominant race. Listen, okay, hold on.
Yeah, oh, I tell you what.
Am I understanding you correctly to say, are you saying that white supremacy does not exist? Or are
it
you
exists.
Saying...
It has nothing to do with a mindset, because there was times, I mean, I don't understand. Hell, Egypt at one time ruled the world.
Yeah, but who's that mindset?
The mindset is, when you talk about white supremacy, you're talking about from an economic, manufacturing, production standpoint. That's where it's at. It ain't had nothing to do with
No, sir. White supremacy permeates every aspect of living in society, whether it's economic.
Give me an example.
Hold on. Let me stop you for 1 second. Whether it's economic, whether it's standards of beauty, white. The white woman is to this day held as the standard of beauty, where you got other ethnic groups that are struggling with their looks and
all right, let's talk about standard of beauty.
So white supremacy is not just about.
Let me show you how false that is. Let me give you an example. Let me give you an example how that's false about standard of beauty. Beauty is going to be in the eye of a hole. But let me ask you something. Why is it that night? Why is it?
That's not the question.
Why is it? Well, I'm going to give you an example. Why is it that Nigerians, why do Nigerians who have a higher education attainment than Asians and whites have higher household income than Asian and white, even first, second, and third generation born here in the United States? Why are they so successful and they just as black as Wesley Snipes? Do you know that they have their own Nigerian?
Nigerians. Okay.
Why do they have Nigerian American beauty contests? They don't want to be with black Americans. Why do the Ghanaians have a Ghanaian American beauty contest?
Nobody wants to come to America and assimilate with the black community. Nobody does, because everybody knows that we're held in as a permanent underclass. Nobody comes here and wants to assimilate with us.
Well,
so,
okay,
I mean,
then if that's the case,
hold on a second. But the idea that white supremacy, it's a social construct, but it was done strategically and intentionally to maintain the dominance of the white race. White people
think there's no such thing as a white race. It's only one race.
It is a fact that white people believe that, number one, they are better, they are superior to every other race that we are in particularly the black race, that we are inherently dumb.
Well,
Have you ever heard of the theories of poverty? There's a cultural theory of poverty that says we are genetically and biologically incapable of being a successful people. Now, we know that's a lie, because as you said,
that's a lie, but it's also the truth.
The world, those are black folks. Hold on. We know it's a lie, but the point of it is they teach this stuff.
Where
to maintain their own dominance and superiority. That's all.
What school did they teach
this at? Teach what? Theories of poverty? I have a bachelor's degree in social work. And listen, I have an associate's degree in liberal arts. And I learned about the cultural theories of poverty in both Wayne County Community College and Wayne State University.
So you was in college and you learned this on your own voluntarily. like,
No. It was taught. It was taught. I have textbooks.
You was in college, though, right?
Absolutely. I have 2 degrees.
Okay. Well, where do they forcefully teach this in elementary schools?
I don't think that they teach, but you would have to be teaching Black history, too, I guess, to teach it at elementary schools. They don't deal with, I mean, you got to, hold on a second. They don't teach sociology, sociological concepts and principles to elementary kids.
Why
not? They don't have the academic prowess yet at that age.
Well, let me ask you a question, ma'am. Why come they don't do it? Who has control of
children,
your public school?
Listen, the same reason why they don't teach medicine to children, because they don't
have enough.
Let's get back to a discussion. Every grade level, they teach at the capacity of that age group. Let me give you my name.
My name is Pianki. This is, hang on for a second, because Black folks argue with each other a lot.
We're having a healthy discussion.
Let me finish, please.
Go ahead.
My profession is I had a company. I'm retired now. I erected buildings like the one that fell down in New York during 9/11. I erect bridges, industrial plants. I'm Black African American. I don't believe in no white supremacy. Because of what I've done. Now, when you say about they and the schools, in these school districts, the states give the people in the school district the power to have whatever curriculum, books, and instructional material that they want to teach their kids.
Listen, the way it is in the state of Missouri. I disagree with you on that. But you have to read the law.
Give me your email address and I'll email it to you.
Email it to me. It's the Community Advocate
Network. Let me write it down. I'm gonna email you the law as it applies to school. I got one right here. Go ahead. What's your email address?
It's the Community Advocate Network.
Is this an organization? This is you. Community Advocate Network.
This is me. The Community Advocate Network. I do advocacy and all of those types of things. So you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, you know. This is me. And that is my email.
You got a Facebook page?
Are you watching from Facebook or are you watching from YouTube?
No, I'm not watching from anything. I call Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, you're
I'm
on Blog
send
Talk.
You,
oh, good. Okay.
I'm going to send you those laws that pertain.
Go ahead and send it to me because I'm not. But I also know the reason why I said I disagree with you, but I am not an educator. I'm a social worker, so
well,
I don't
that's all right.
Know
the laws apply.
What,
the laws
they
apply
develop
to people.
Those curriculum.
Community Advocate Network, Michigan. Is that where it's at? You got the glasses on. This is you here.
Uh huh. Yeah.
You live right now. You got on a white blouse. All
right.
I'm gonna send it to you.
I am live right now. I'm sorry.
All righty. I'm going to say
to
you.
Yeah, so I appreciate you calling in. This is my first time actually getting a call from Blog Talk, so this is great.
All right,
And tune in every Sunday because we have these type of discussions because it's very important, and we won't agree on everything, but we still need to talk about these things and share our perspectives because that is how we learn from each other, okay?
All righty. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you for calling
bye-bye.
In. Okay, bye-bye. That was great. That was the first. That was the first time I've ever gotten a call from Blog Talk. Let me take this next caller. Okay. All right.
Greetings. Greetings.
Okay. Hello, hello, hello. You're live on the air.
Greetings. My name is Elena. I'm calling from Georgia.
Hi, Elena from Georgia.
Yes. I was just listening in to the caller, and I hear so much denial in the dialogue,
yeah.
And I'm very disappointed. Reality shows us, yes, we have a few Negroes that make it, but they don't speak for all of us.
No.
Some of the ones that fell through the cracks, so to state. We have documentation that we live in the most industrialized country in the world, but yet we occupy the rungs and has the quality of life as a person in a third world country. We're being colonized.
Yeah.
Our
yeah.
right to self-determination has been circumvented.
Yeah.
And we are under duress here. Our people, bodies, black bodies are dropping in droves. So when I hear Negroes come
yeah.
on and try to sugarcoat
mm-hmm.
our reality, I have a problem
yeah.
with that. A serious
yes,
problem.
Yes, ma'am.
You are a social
yes, ma'am.
Worker. And you see the reality.
Yes, ma'am.
And you see the numbers.
Yeah.
I was in Detroit with a brother named Brother Ramzu Yunus a couple of months ago, last year, in 2019. I went
mm-hmm.
to Detroit, and that brother is up there now trying to get issues, human rights violations resolved, where our people are homeless, experiencing permanent extreme homelessness, and these sisters I got to witness firsthand.
Wow.
They were working poor, and they were living in cars with their children.
My God.
I talked to people who lost their homes because certain counties decided to jack the tax revenue up. I witnessed mentally ill people living on the street, eating out of the trash can. But you have Negroes that have a nerve to come in and tell you how great life has been for them. Well, hoorah to you.
Yeah.
But let me tell you what the reality of the numbers speaks to me say. That we are colonized, time to exercise self-determination. We are poor not because we're stupid. We're poor because these people took our things. After slavery, we were given land. After slavery,
mm-hmm.
we set up towns, and they came
mm-hmm.
in and dropped bombs.
Burned
you got
it down. Yes,
Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You got your Rosewood. You got several Rosewoods in Georgia. Several Rosewoods.
There was a lot of black prosperous communities throughout the country, and they got rid
Thank
of all
you.
Of them.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So that contributes to the poverty. And yes,
yeah.
they teach our children in through the curricula that their children are superior and they are inferior because they start their identity out with enslavement, with slavery,
exactly.
telling our children they
yes.
came from slavery when that is not true. You had a black American that was right here before that European guy. Then the last wave of the slave trade, the last wave of Africans to get here, they were enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
They were prisoners of war, okay?
That's right.
So when you are not taught your correct collective history for your collective
mm-hmm.
identity, that kills your collective self-esteem. And that has put a planet a mental seed. Look how superior this Negro thing. He can call in and tell you what white supremacy is when you're a social worker. And you know what the numbers say. Who does?
Yeah.
Who continues to even sit and listen to this? White supremacy is here. Black bodies keep dropping. They keep dropping.
Yes.
Every single week you're reading about a black body. And no, the government is anything about it. Their court system right here in the state of Georgia, okay? Right here in the state
mm-hmm.
of Georgia, in South Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
A young man
mm-hmm.
was gunned down. They didn't make a move till a black militia came down there. That's when they tried to.
Now, is this after the Rayshard Brooks?
That's not Is
this after the Rayshard Brooks?
This was during the Ahmaud case, the most recent one.
Okay,
there's
Ahmaud
Arbery.
Yeah.
There's several cases,
wow,
my sister, throughout the United States that fit the same bill. It reaches from all the,
yeah,
way from county government all the way up to the governor's office, all the way up to the White House. And you got Negroes that sit here and try to tell you what reality is. Well, I'm sorry. It's a new day. It's a new day. And the bottom line is a line has been drawn in the sand. We're,
yeah,
no longer. I'm part of a movement, the self-determination movement. We're utilizing international and human rights law to secure a future for our babies. We're not listening to this.
Send me
movement.
Your information, sister. Send me your information, please.
You have my number as soon as you're off your call. I want you to contact,
yes,
me. We're about to file,
yes,
papers, documentation for precautionary measures and also reparations. To be
my
a part,
God, yes,
doing, to be a part of what we're doing, all you have to do is sign a declaration and declare your rights, your human rights. You got local,
awesome,
rights,
awesome, awesome.
You got state rights, and you got federal rights. They sidestep,
right,
our human rights, and you got human rights. Your human rights,
that's right,
supersede all of that.
Supersede all of it, yeah.
And after slavery, there was missteps. Our ancestors made it perfectly clear. They wanted their own land. But what did they,
that's,
do?
Right.
There was a compromise made during Reconstruction where the federal government,
mm-hmm,
pulled out the help and pulled out their,
mm-hmm,
support. And then they,
mm-hmm,
unleashed the Klan and the other white supremacists on us. We had senators all up in North Carolina and Louisiana. We had different politicians. They would commit raids on our people, and they murdered them.
You,
and that's why we're in the shape we're in. Do you hear me?
That's,
don't,
right,
allow Negroes,
that's
like,
right,
that to come on your show and tell you what reality is, because he's lying.
Yeah.
He's a liar, and he knows he's,
mm,
lying. That's a direct, mm, attack, mm, on our reality. If he's happy with his political situation, good luck. But the rest of us getting ready to get up off this goddamn plantation. We got to go.
Yes, ma'am.
Keep you and your children, your grandchildren off. But we up out of this mug. We out this
we
plantation.
We out here.
It's no,
yes, God.
With us.
I love it. I thank you so much. Are you, what are you listening to us through? Are you on Blog Talk? Or are you
on Blog Talk? I'm on Blog Talk Radio. I'm on Blog Talk right now, but I am a member of the Afro Descendant Institute of Human Rights. I'm a human rights defender,
yes,
and a chief facilitator of the Afro Descendant Confederated Nation USA. And right,
wonderful,
now, also Brother Ramzu Yunus, he's in Detroit. He's working furiously, registering people, getting people signed up so they can declare their human rights. And
I need to find out who that is. I'm here in Detroit. That's where I'm at.
Okay. Yes, I will definitely get you connected with this brother. He needs the assistance. We're trying to get the word out as fast as we possibly can to get people registered.
Wonderful.
Because by August, we will be filing proper documentation to do what it is that we need to do. But we have to give due,
wonderful,
diligence and give our people the opportunity to join us. Negroes like,
yes,
that just got off the phone. I don't have any tolerance for them, because it's them that's the reason why we're in this.
I try to let, you know what, I try to let everybody call in and share their perspective. I was listening to somebody last night, and they were saying, we got to do a show on the history of the sellout.
Yes, yes, yes. And let me be your co-host.
You know, we got
a running list, sis. Now, I don't know about it, but I got a shit list with a whole lot of sellouts I put on there every week. I add it to my list. And he just made the top of the list with the statements he made. It's selfish.
Yeah, he was.
How many did you employ? How many people did you give a job to? That's my,
yeah,
question.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. That's right.
Who for you?
That's
what,
right,
are you doing now?
That's,
who,
right,
are you employing now? How many houses have you built and have you rented out to black people? What have you done now?
Right.
Who good for you, hoorah for you. If you like your current political forced relationship or forced assimilation, because that's the policy that we're under right now, that made us better, that made us dependent, and that's what happened to us. That is what
Listen, that's the whole system of capitalism anyway. When people talk about, you know, and we all want to eradicate poverty, you're not going to get, as long as you have capitalism, poverty has to exist. It's a rig. It's a con.
And the whole system
is set up for winners and losers. You can't have winners without losers.
But sis, it's even deeper than that. Because let me tell you something. We matriculate $1.2 trillion as consumers, but we don't control it. Our problem is we don't control our politics. Our problem is we don't own no means of production.
Yeah.
Why? Because we're colonized. All those things were taken from us. All those things were taken from us. And we've been penciled in and encapsulated into a polity that relegates us to poverty. Well, it's the way out of that.
Yeah, permanent second-class citizenship,
How do we skirt that? Whether they vote to the right, to the left, whether you vote Democrat or Republican. When you declare self-determination, you don't wait on nobody to feed you. You have the means feed yourself. And that's what has been happening. During the 1960s, when Malcolm X and Martin Luther King were out there doing their thing or whatever, the route to go, we were manipulated politically and legally. Malcolm tried to point us in the direction to go. When Africa was liberating itself, the United States, we were supposed to be liberated right here. The United States signed on to a document with the UN stating they would put all their non-self-governing peoples on a non-self-governing list that would have pulled us out of the jurisdiction of the United States and gave car and protection.
Political protection.
But that did not happen
because
the Negroes, they just got off their goddamn phone. Do you hear me? I do my research. I know what I'm talking about. Well, I'm upset because in 2020, after all that bloodshed during the 60s, here it is, 2020, we got to go back and fix up what Negroes like that just got off that phone messed up. Well, I want to make it clear, he needs to stay on his side of the fence. He don't speak for us. He don't represent our interests. One way or the other. Now, we have a right to 3 passports. For those of us who want to go back to Africa, we're working on that plan. For those of us
Now, see, here's the thing. I mean, we haven't lived in Africa in 500 years. Matter of fact, the countries that we were stolen from, I don't even think those countries, those parts of Africa even exist anymore.
There are countries that have set aside land for us. What I'm saying, we have people who want to go back. We're working on that so they can repatriate in Africa if they choose to go, and repatriate in here in the United States because we have homelands in here, black towns here that need to be redeveloped. In Oklahoma,
I really want to see. And this is called the movement of self-determination.
Yes, ma'am. It's the self.
Say that name again.
Let me give you the name of our website. Go to https://  www.adconfederation.com.
A D as in David Confederation.com.
AD.com.
Say it again,
AD.com? A as in Apple, D as in David, Confederation.com.
Yes, okay. That's what I wanted to repeat it for because I'm live on Facebook and I'm live on YouTube as well.
Exactly.
I wanted to repeat it. They don't have to do the HTTPS. They can just do www.a.com. as in Apple, D as in David, confederation.com. And I'll put that on my screen right now so that my viewers can see that.
Yes, yes. And we have, what we have done is we have used international and human rights law to secure our human rights here and to address human rights violations in the United States. Our chief facilitator, Dr. Mustafa, he's the chief facilitator of our nation, and he's the dean of the Afro-Descendant Institute of Human Rights. And for over 5+ years, we have been on the roll doing what we need to do. We've conducted the research. We've traveled abroad. We've submitting documents. You will be able to see on the website where we're bringing our people into nationhood so we can create a brighter day for the future of our children and our grandchildren.
Absolutely.
So they won't have to grow
Absolutely.
Up in this reality, in this unprincipled relationship
yes.
of encapsulation, where you can drop a black body on the spot and there's no justice.
And step over it, yes.
Step over it. Let
yeah.
it lay out there in the
yeah.
sun, cooking in the sun 4 hours. Who does that?
That's
Who
right.
allows their
That's
people
right.
to continue? To live up under some such condition. Those Negroes who wants to distance themselves, I suggest they stay over on their side of the fence at this point.
Stay on their side of the fence. Yeah.
We're moving. We're getting
yeah.
off this.
That's
station.
Right. You're talking right. You're talking right, sis. And I'm going to go. I'm going to take some other callers. But
yes.
listen, do you have a pen? Do you have a pen? I want you to email me.
Let me get a pen. Let me get one.
I want you to
Thank
email
you
me. And that's www.adconfederation.com. Make
yes,
sure you guys
I'm on
write
Facebook
that down.
As well.
And she is on Facebook as well. So make sure that you you guys check her out and see what's going on with this. There's a lot of things. People are coming together and people are trying to make some things happen. Make sure that we get the structural changes that we need that, you know, so we won't be talking about this for the next 100 years. You know,
yes.
this stuff is not new. We've been talking about this same stuff. Okay, you ready, sis?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
It's the Community Advocate Network.
Okay.
@gmail.com.
Okay, okay.
Email me. I want to know who your Detroit connections are because I'm right here in Detroit. And
okay.
So I can find out how I can assist them, and especially with that voting.
Okay, all right then. We'll do. And
all
take
right.
my number.
Thank you so much
call
for calling
me.
In.
Okay.
All right. Yes, thank you. So, listen, you know, we've got folks out here putting in the work, guys. They're putting in the work. And they're trying to make some things happen for the black community so that we don't have to keep going through this. Mothers are tired of burying their sons. Children are tired of burying their fathers. And really, the women are not safe at this point. You know, it's just been an all-out war declared on black people. Anytime that, like she said, you know, you can kill black folks and, you know, step over them drinking a hot Pepsi, no justice, no charges, no, you know, I mean, it's crazy. We got to get changes. We have to. We have to. And everybody has their, I know, and I said this before, I can't get out in them streets marching and all of that stuff, but there's all kinds of ways that each of us can play our part in supporting this movement. We have to get together. We can't just sit back and talk about what we should and shouldn't be doing. We can't sit back and complain about how things are being done. These young folks have taken it to the streets. They are not waiting on us anymore. They have totally lost confidence in the older generations, and they are. And you know they have. They're risking COVID-19 out there protesting. So, you know, we need to support this. And we don't have to agree on everything. We can sort it out. Sort it out later. But let's get the work done. Let's get the work done. Because, you know, folks, A lot of times people don't care about stuff until it hit their doorstep, until it's their son, you know. Don't do that. Don't do that. Let's get together now and affect real change in not just in our community, in society. Because there are things, you know, when she talks about state rights, local rights, federal rights, we need to know these things, and we need to know what is available to us so that we can access, you know, and improve our lives, the quality of our lives. That's what it's all about. You know, white people just want to be in charge. They want to be able to walk up to you in stores and stuff and ask you questions and demand that you answer them. You know, this stuff is crazy. This stuff is crazy, but it doesn't. What I want us to understand is that this stuff doesn't come out of nowhere. These are old laws, Supreme Court rulings. We talked about some of this stuff, and I highly recommend that you guys, if you all didn't see my video, The Purge, it's not the best quality. I still have that old camera, but it's good enough for government work. You can get the message out of it. We talk about some of these things, you know, these things that have been passed down through the generations. And even with certain things, you know, we were talking about the Dred Scott case, Dred Scott versus Sanford, where the freed man went down to Mississippi to do some work for his boss. He was already free. He went down there and got sold off into slavery again. He said, wait a minute. And the case went to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, A black man has no right that any white man is bound to respect. Very famous case. Go look it up. Dred Scott versus Sanford, 1856 to 1857, somewhere up in there. And what happened is, and the thing about it is that how the Supreme Court ruling is written, it says that the black man has no right that any white man is bound to respect if he deems it economically feasible for him. So, in other words, if a white man decided that he needed you for his personal income growth, you know, his personal economic standing, they could sell you back off into slavery. Now, that stuff was eradicated supposedly with the 13th and 14th Amendment when they made up the anti-slavery laws. But the whole point of it is that those types of things are still in the mindset and in white culture. And like I said, I talked about this a couple weeks ago. When I see videos all the time, and they call them parents, people coming up to people in stores, party stores, asking them questions and all that kind of stuff, and thinking they're supposed to, because they think that they have an ability over us to, because from that Supreme Court, things like that Supreme Court ruling, that's not the only thing, but that's one of the things, that they can essentially override and demote our rights at any given time by any white person. That kind of stuff is still ingrained in white society, white culture. So this is what is happening. And we need to be aware and we need to get to work. We need to figure out what it is that we can do. If it's nothing more than voting, I still want to go ahead and talk about this absentee voting. You guys, I want to encourage you to sign up for that. I was trying to put it on screen. Let me see. I think this is it. So I want to encourage everybody to go ahead and sign up for it. Well, I guess that's about as big as it's going to get. Make sure that you signed up for the absentee voting. I was reading an article last night. They were saying that absentee voting requests have gone up 350% here in Michigan, which is wonderful. You can dial 313. I believe the number is 876-VOTE, 313-876-VOTE. That is the number that you call to order your absentee voting package. And call and get it now because we got primaries in August. And we got the general election in November. And so we need to make sure that we have this stuff ready. Also, let's see what else we got here. Blackout Tuesday is coming up July the 7th. This is what was called, let me bring that up. Hold on a second. I'm on a new platform today, guys. So that's the other thing. I didn't get any freezing either. So that other platform was doing too much freezing. So Blackout Tuesday. Blackout Tuesday is this Tuesday, July the 7th. This is what has been called on by the rapper T.I. and what's the guy, Killer Mike, with Blackout Tuesday, no black dollars in the economy. Go grocery shopping, go and whatever you're going to do between now and Monday. You heard the sister that called in from Georgia, $1.2 trillion that the black dollars that that flow through the economy annually. And it stays in the black community. It bounces one time. They were talking about how in the Asian community their dollars bounce 8 times before it leaves their community. The white dollar bounces 3 or 4 times or whatever it is. I'm just throwing out some numbers. I can't remember the exact stats. But they were talking about that. And one guy said, Dr. Claude Anderson, he said, the black community goes bankrupt every night at 7 o'clock. You know, when all of the stores and the retailers and stuff close down, that's it, because we don't own anything. And there's a reason for that. But, yeah, so Blackout Tuesday, July the 7th, that's coming up. We want to make sure that we do that. And it's a boycott. It's a boycott. What is this? It's a boycott, and you know we're doing it because we need to start practicing group economics. Besides what impact it'll have on the economy and all of that, we're trying to develop a system of practicing group economics. This is why the Asians are so successful and the Nigerians that the gentleman was talking about and all of these types of things is because every other ethnic group, generally Hispanics, all of them practice group economics. And Hispanics are the largest minority group in America now anyway. They have surpassed us in every – they have more electoral votes. And they supersede blacks in annual household income. Did you know that? Hispanics make more money than black people do now. We are literally the bottom class. You know, they have more voting power than the black community does. This is very important. Trump just appointed federal judges. I think it's somewhere like 160 federal judges have been appointed by Donald Trump. They'll serve lifetimes. This is how white supremacy is sustained. See, they put not just the systems in place, but the people in place to maintain those systems. So we want, you know, proper sentencing and all of that kind of stuff. Our best hope at this point are these local elections. That's the primaries we're talking about that's coming up here in Michigan in August. And we're very blessed when we talk about the absentee voting. You know, out in Kentucky, Mitch McConnell shut down I think he left one voting place open in Louisville for 600,000 people to vote at. Voter suppression at its highest level. So we're very blessed, those of us that are here in Michigan, to have a governor, really, and, you know, that, you know, wants to make sure that we have the provision so that our voices are heard. I mean, the stuff that is going on, I mean, literally, voting is under attack. They understand that they don't want everybody to vote. That's the whole thing. They don't want that. And so, you know, we got to get with it. I was trying to see what else, if there was anything else that I needed to tell you guys about. Oh, we just celebrated the anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 on July the 2nd. And there's a few Civil Rights Acts. Let me see. This one, the anniversary was on July the 2nd. Okay, yeah. So that was the Civil Rights Act of 1964. We have four. Civil Rights Act of 1866, Civil Rights Act of 1968. We got 1875, 1964, 1965, and 1968. Yeah. So those are the three Civil Rights Acts. And they're all different. I think the 1965 one was basically dealing with discrimination in housing. That is also the one that deals with the Anti-Riot Act that makes it unlawful, illegal to start riots and protests and stuff like that. So we need to know these types of things and distinguish between them. A lot of times, people will say the Civil Rights Act, and we just kind of lump it all into one. A lot of people think it's only one Civil Rights Act, but it's not. It's four. It's four. Just like the Constitution, some people say, you know, we have the Constitution of the United States. There are some black scholars who suggest that there are two constitutions because the initial Constitution did not include black people. So, in their estimation, the second constitution was with the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. So all of these types of things that are nuances and contribute to the whole of things that we experience in our everyday lives and our quality of lives. If you think it doesn't affect you, you're sadly mistaken. You know, people talk about the statues and the monuments and stuff. Well, that was a long time ago. Listen, that head of George Washington that's on Mount Rushmore was dedicated in 1930. That wasn't that long ago. The Confederate monument that I talked about that's on the side of Stone Mountain, Georgia, that was just finished in 1970, May the 9th, 1970. So, okay? So, but at any rate, I forgot to thank my guest host on Father's Day, Daryl Horton and Marvin Arnold. They came in. They were gracious enough to come in and talk with us. Whew, I almost forgot it. They came in and dealt with some things about, just challenges of raising black sons and police brutality and all of the different hate crimes that are coming up. Like the sister was telling us about, there's other cases out there in Georgia. And I believe that there's a lot of people that are young black men and women who have been killed that we don't even hear about. We know the Philando Castile, Eric Gardner, Trayvon Martin, and all of those names. But I was looking at some numbers, and we again talked about it on that other video, The Purge. What I came the numbers I came across that it was somewhere around 8,000 black people that have been killed by the police between 2013 and 2019. And I think that's a low ball number. I need to verify that number, check it against some other statistics. But it's somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 black people that have been killed by the police in the past 6 years. That's a lot of people. It's a whole problem. It's a whole problem. And we're talking about renegade cops that's out here literally killing black people. And that's systemic, too. That's systemic, too. We got this law and order stuff going on, we got this romance with law and order and all of that. Law and order is good in its place, but what we're dealing with has nothing to do with law and order. First of all, the police were created for slave patrols. Understand that. And they are still policing black people. That is the history and the culture of law enforcement. It was created for slave patrols, and that is their culture to this day. That's why the Black Lives Matter movement is attacking them so hard. Besides the fact that King and everybody else dealt with this stuff years and years and years ago, it's still going on, but it's legitimate because it hasn't stopped. In fact, it's worse. They started these hangings again. Unbelievable. California is a liberal state. They had two within 2 weeks, just a couple weeks ago, of your two young black men that were hung, and they're calling them all suicide. I think it was five in the past month. It's been five people hung in different parts of the country over the past month or so. So this is a whole problem. And so what you see with the Black Lives Matter movement is a strategic step by step. They did the rioting, and so they little by little they're going after the police brutality, and then now they're dealing with the images and symbols of racism and white supremacy. And we'll see where they go from here, because I'm telling you, somebody did their homework. I think these kids are doing a phenomenal job. There's problems, there's concerns about things that are going on in the movement, yes. But overall, these kids are doing a great job. They really are. If you really, like, just investigate, just do some research on some of the stuff that they're doing and see how these things came about, and it's absolutely a righteous cause, and we definitely need to support it. We need to support it. So is there anything else I want to say? Hi, Nikki. Is Nikita still in here? I want to thank any and everybody that supported the my dear sister Nikita, her pull up and serve event on last Saturday in June. Nikita or Shirley, if y'all are still here, call please, and just share with us briefly about the experience if you can. But anyway, if she's not available, I will definitely find out when she's going to do the next one. And what she's doing is in the downtown area, going down there and taking meals to the homeless people and things like that. And so I'll definitely keep you guys posted on when she's going to start taking donations and when the next event will be, and so that we can all participate with that. Who else is in here? That's the petitions for U.S. citizens, blacks, and everyone else. Open carrying of weapons is protected by the Second Amendment. Yeah, who was this? Plinky. If I'm not pronouncing your name correctly, please forgive me. Tiaki Banco. So, well, let me see if I can put it up on the screen. So what Tiaki is saying is that the Constitution is for U.S. citizens, blacks, and everyone else. Opium or piano weapons is protected by the United States, by the Second Amendment, I'm sorry. And that is, I understand what you're saying. What I was saying about the 13th and 14th Amendment, there are some black scholars who suggest that there is a second constitution, which was the 13th, that started with the 13th Amendment, where blacks were included. There's been much debate as to whether or not the founding fathers of the country had other ethnic groups besides whites in mind when they drafted the initial constitution. So that's what I was talking about there. Were we not slaves during the writing of the constitution? I'm not sure if that's a question. I'm not sure if that's a question or not. But thank you all for joining me. Robert Brown, Pianchi Banco, Shirley, all you guys, so much. Yvonne, I thought I saw Yvonne in here. And Reverend Cohill is here. And Tierra. Okay, so thank you as always. Thank you guys for joining me. And I will definitely be back next week, Lord's willing, to continue our conversation on this cultural war series. We will we'll see you next time. Take care, everybody. Have a great one. Bye. Lots of things happening.